is in heavy, tense silence. It suits me just fine, giving me time to think, and Cal revels in the quiet. After the past few days, he's just as hungry for rest as I am. Not even Killorn dares to joke. Instead, he's content to sit on a gnarled root, weaving strands of tall grass into a brittle, useless net. He smiles faintly, enjoying the old familiar knots. I think of Nyx down in the village, probably pulled from his bed, maybe gagged, definitely ensnared in a net of my own making. Would Farley threaten his wife, his children, to make him come? Or would Shade simply grab his wrist and jump, sending them both hurtling through the sickening vice of teleportation until they land in the grove? Born 12-20-271. Nyx is almost 49, my father's age. Will Nyx be like him, wounded and broken? Or is he whole, waiting for us to break him? Before I can fall into a spiral of dark and damning questions, the tall grass stirs. Someone is coming. It's like flipping a switch in Cal. He pushes off his tree, every muscle taut and ready for whatever might step out of the grass. I half expect to see fire on his fingertips. But after long years of military training, Cal knows better. In the darkness, his flame would be like the watchtower beacon, alerting every officer to our presence. To my surprise, Killorn looks just as vigilant as the prince. He drops his grass net, crushing it underfoot as he stands. He even pulls a hidden dagger from his boot, a sharp, thick little blade he once used to gut fish. The sight of it sets my teeth on edge. I don't know when the knife became a weapon, or when he started carrying it in his shoe, probably around the time people started shooting at him. I'm not without my own weapons. The Lothrum in my blood is all I need, sharper than any blade, more brutal than any bullet. Sparks vein beneath my skin, ready if I need them. My ability has a subtlety that Cal's lacks. A bird call splits the night, hooting through the grass. Killorn responds in kind, whistling out a low tune. He sounds like the thrushes that nest in the stilt houses at home. Farley, he murmurs under his breath, pointing at the tall grass. She is the first to step out of the shadows, but not the last. Two figures follow. One is my brother, leaning on his crutch, and the other is squat, with muscled limbs and the round belly men gain with age. Nyx. Cal's hand closes around my upper arm, exerting a slight pressure. He pulls gently, moving me back into the deeper shadows of the grove. I go without hesitation, knowing that we can't be too careful. Dimly, I wish for a scrap of scarlet to mask my face as we did in Naersea. "Did you have any trouble?" Killorn says, stepping up to Farley in Shade. He sounds older somehow, more in control than I'm used to. He keeps his eyes on Nyx, following every twitch of the round little Newblood's fingers. Farley waves off the question like an annoyance. "Simple, even with this one limping around," she adds, jabbing a thumb at Shade. Then she turns to Nyx. He didn't put up a fight. Despite the darkness, I see a deep red blush creep across Nyx's face.
"Well, I'm not stupid, am I?"
He speaks gruffly, directly, a man with no use for secrets, though his blood hides the greatest secret of all.
"You're that Scarlet Guard. The officers would string me up for having you in my house, even uninvited."
"Good to know," Shade mutters under his breath, his bright eyes dim a little as he cuts a meaningful look my way. Our very presence could doom this man. "Now, Mr. Marston..."
"Nyx," he grumbles.
Something glimmers in his eye, and he follows Shade's gaze. He finds me in the shadows and squints, trying to see my face.
"But I think you already knew that."
Killorn steps lightly, shifting so he blocks me from view. The motion seems innocent, but Nyx's brow furrows as he understands the deeper meaning. He bristles, standing toe-to-toe with Killorn. The younger boy towers over him, but Nyx doesn't show an inch of fear. He raises one ruddy finger pointing at Killorn's chest.
"You pulled me out here after curfew, That's a hanging offense. Now you tell me what for, or else I'll wander on home and try not to die on the way.
You're different, Nix. My voice sounds too high, too young. How do I explain? How do I tell him what I wish someone told me? What I don't even truly understand? You know, there's something about you, something you can't explain. You might even think there's something wrong with you. My last words find home like arrows. The gruff little man flinches as they land. Bits of his anger melt away. He knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes,
he says. I don't move from my place deep in the grove, but instead gesture for Killorn to step aside. He does as asked, letting Nix walk past him. As he approaches, joining me in the shadows, my heartbeat quickens. It pounds in my ears, a nervous, eager drum. This man is a new blood, like me, like Shade, another who understands. Nix Marston looks nothing like my father, but they have the same eyes. Not in color, not in shape, but still, they are the same. They share the hollow look that speaks of emptiness, a loss time cannot heal. To my horror, Nix's hurt runs deeper even than Dad's, a man who can barely breathe, let alone walk. I see it in the droop of his shoulders, in the neglect of his gray hair and clothing. Were I still a thief, a rat, I wouldn't bother to steal from this man. He has nothing left to give. He returns my stare, eyes flickering over my face and body. They widen when he realizes who I am. The Lightning Girl. But when he recognizes Cal at my shoulder, his shock quickly gives way to rage. For an almost 50-year-old man, Nix is surprisingly fast. In the shadows, I barely see him drop a shoulder and charge, catching Cal around the middle. Though he's half the prince's size, he takes him down like a bull, smashing them both into a sturdy tree trunk. It cracks loudly beneath the blow, shaking from roots to branches. After half a heartbeat, I realize that I should probably step in. Cal is Cal, but we have no idea who Nix is or what he can do. Nix gets in one bruising punch, hitting Cal's jaw so hard I fear it might be broken, before I manage to get my arms around his neck. Don't make me, Nix, I rumble in his ear. Don't make me. Do your worst, Nix spits back, trying to elbow me off, but I hold firm, squeezing his neck. The flesh feels rock hard beneath my touch. Very well. I push enough power through me to stun Nix into submission. The jolt should set his hair on end. My purple sparks hit his skin, and I expect him to drop back, maybe shake a little, and come to his senses. But he doesn't seem to feel my lightning at all. It only annoys him, like a fly would a horse. I shock him again, stronger this time, and again, nothing. In my surprise, he manages to throw me off, and I land hard, my back against a tree. Cal does better, dodging and catching as many punches as he can, but he hisses in pain at the contact, even the blows that glance off his arm. Finally, the flamemaker bracelet at his wrist sparks, forming a fireball in his hand. It breaks against Nix's shoulder like water on rock, burning the clothes but leaving the flesh unharmed. Stone skin echoes in my head. But this man is no such thing. His skin is still ruddy and smooth, not gray or stony. It is simply impenetrable. Stop this, I growl, trying to keep my voice low. But the scuffle, or should I say butchery, continues on. Silver blood pours from Cal's mouth, staining Nix's knuckles black in the shadows. Killorn and Farley rush past me, their hurried footsteps pounding in time. I don't know how much use they'll be against this human wrecking ball, and I hold out a hand to stop them, but Shade reaches Nix before they do, jumping into position behind him. He grabs Nix by the neck, like I did, and then they're both gone. They appear 10 feet away a split second later, and Nix falls to the ground, his face vaguely green. He tries to get up, but Shade braces his crutch against his neck, pinning him. Move and I'll do it again, he says, his eyes alive and dangerous. Nix raises one silver-stained hand in surrender. The other clutches his stomach, still flipping from the surprise and sensation of being squeezed through thin air. I know it all too well.
Enough, he pants.
A sheen of sweat glints across his forehead, betraying the exhaustion setting in. Impenetrable, but not unstoppable. Killorn plops back down on his root, snatching up the remnants of his net. He smiles to himself, almost laughing at the sight of Cal beaten and bleeding.
I like this one, he says. I like him very much.
I fight to my feet, ignoring the old aches setting off across my bones. The prince is with us, Nix. He's here to help, same as me.
That does nothing to assuage him.
Nix sits back on his heels, baring yellow teeth. His breath sounds ragged and visceral.
Help, he scoffs. That silver bastard helped my daughters into an early grave.
Cal does his best to look polite, despite the blood dripping down his chin. Sir.
Dara Marston. Jenny Marston.
Nix hisses in reply. His glare goes right through me, a knife in the darkness.
The Hammer Legion, Battle of the Falls. They were 19 years old.
Died in the war. A tragedy, if not a crime. But how is it Cal's fault? Judging by the look of pure shame crossing his face, Cal agrees with Nix. When he speaks, his voice is thick, choked with emotion.
We won, he murmurs, unable to look Nix in the eye. We won.
Nix clenches a single fist, but resists the urge to charge.
You won. They drowned in the river, and their bodies went over Maiden Falls. The gravediggers couldn't even find their shoes.
What was it the letter said? He presses on, and Cal winces.
Oh, yes, that my girls died for victory, to defend the kingdom. And there were some very nice signatures at the bottom, from the dead king, the general of the hammer, and the tactical genius who decided an entire legion should march across the river.
Every eye turns to Cal, and he burns under our gaze. His face goes white, flushed with blood and disgrace. I remember his room back in the Hall of the Sun, the books and manuals filled to the brim with notes and tactics. They made me sick then, and they make me sick now, with Cal and myself, because I've forgotten who he truly is. Not just a prince, not just a soldier, but a murderer. In another life, it could have been me he marched to death, or my brothers, or Killorn.
I'm sorry, Cal breathes.
He forces himself to look up, to meet the eyes of an angry, grieving father. I suppose he was trained to do it.
I know my words mean nothing. Your daughters, all the soldiers, deserved to live. And so do you, sir.
Nix's knees crack when he stands, but he doesn't seem to notice.
Is that a threat, boy?
A warning,
Cal replies, shaking his head.
You're like Mare, like Shade.
He gestures to us in turn.
Different. What we call a new blood, red and silver. Don't you ever call me silver,
Nix says through gritted teeth. It doesn't stop Cal from continuing, rising to his feet.
My brother will be hunting people like you. He plans to kill you all and pretend you never existed. He plans to erase you from history.
Something sticks in Nix's throat, and confusion clouds his eyes. He glances to me looking for support.
There are others?
Many others, Nix. This time when I touch his skin, I have no intention of shocking him. Girls, boys, old and young, all over the country waiting to be found.
And when you find them, us, what then?
I open my mouth to answer, but nothing comes out. I haven't thought that far ahead. Farley steps forward when I can't, extending a hand. She holds a red scarf, ragged but clean. The Scarlet Guard will protect them, hide them, and train them, if they want to be trained. I almost balk at her words, thinking back to the colonel,
The last thing he seems to want is new bloods around, but Farley sounds so sure, so convincing. Like always, I'm sure she has something else up her sleeve. Something I shouldn't question. Yet, slowly, Nix takes the scarf from her, turning it over in his stained hands.
And if I refuse?
He asks lightly, but I hear the steel beneath. Then Shade will put you right back in bed, and you'll never hear from us again, I tell him.
But Maven will come. If you don't want to stick with us, you're better off in the wild.
His grip tightens on the scarlet fabric.
Not much of a choice.
But you do have a choice. I hope he knows I mean it. I hope it for my own sake, for my own soul.
You can choose to stay or come. You know better than anyone how much has been lost. But you can help us regain something, too.
Nix is quiet for a long while after that. He paces, scarf in hand, occasionally glancing through the branches at the watchtower beacon. It revolves three times before he speaks again.
My girls are dead. My wife's dead. And I'm sick of the marsh stink,
he says, stopping in front of me.
I'm with you.
Then he glares over my shoulder, and I don't need to turn around to know he's looking at Cal.
Just keep that one far away from me.
12. We trudge back through the woods unscathed, chased by nothing except sea breeze and clouds, but I can't shake the feeling of dread curling around my heart. Even though Nix almost split Cal's skull, recruiting him seemed easy. Too easy. And if I've learned anything over the past 17 years, over the past month, it's that nothing is easy. Everything has a price. If Nix is not a trap, then he is certainly a danger. Anyone can betray anyone. So even though he reminds me of Dad, even though he's little more than a gray beard and grief, even though he's like me, I close my heart to the man from Courant. I have saved him from Maven, told him what he was, and let him make his choice. Now I must carry on, to do the same for another, and another, and another. All that matters is the next name. The starlight illuminates the woods enough for a quick glance, and I thumb through the now familiar pages of Julian's list. There are few in the area clustered around the city of Harbor Bay. Two are listed in the city proper, and one in the Newtown slum. How we'll get to any of them, I'm not sure. The city will surely be walled like Archeon in Somerton, while the restrictions on techie slums are even worse than the measures. Then I remember. Walls and restrictions don't apply to Shade. Luckily, he's walking better by the hour and shouldn't need the crutch after a few more days. Then we'll be unstoppable. Then we might even win. The thought thrills and confuses me in equal measure. What will a world like that look like? I can only imagine where I'll be. At home, maybe, certainly with my family, somewhere in the woods where I can hear a river. With Killorn nearby, of course, but Cal? I don't know where he'll choose to be, in the end. In the darkness of night, it's easy to let your mind wander. I'm used to forests and don't really need to focus to keep from tripping on roots and leaves, so I dream as I walk, thinking of what might be. An army of newbloods, Farley leading the Scarlet Guard, a proper red uprising. From the choke trenches to the alleys of Greytown, Cal always said that all-out war was not worth the cost, that the loss of red and silver life would be too great. I hope he's right. I hope Maven will see what we are, what we can do, and know he cannot win. Even he is not a fool. Even he knows when he is beaten. At least, I hope he does. Because as far as I can tell, Maven has never been defeated. Not when it really counts. Cal won their father, his soldiers, but Maven won the crown. Maven won every battle that truly mattered. And given time, he would have won me too. I see him in every shadow of every tree, a ghost standing tall against the rainstorm in the bowl of bones. Water streams between the points of his iron crown, into his eyes and mouth, into his collar, into the icy abyss that is his wasted heart. It goes red in color, turning from water to my blood. He opens his mouth to taste it, and the teeth within are sharp, gleaming razors of white bone. I blink him away, blotting out the memory of the traitor prince. Farley murmurs in the darkness, detailing the true purpose of the guard. Nix is a smart man, but like everyone else beneath the rule of the Burning Crown, he has been fed lies. Terrorism, anarchy, bloodlust. Those are the words the broadcasts use when describing the guard. They show the children dead in the sun shooting, the flooded wreckage of the Archeon Bridge, everything to convince the country of our supposed evil. All the while, the real enemy sits on his throne and smiles. "What about her?" Nix whispers, tossing a flint-eyed glance in my direction. "Is it true she seduced the prince into killing the king?" Nix's question cuts like a blade, so wounding I expect to see a knife sticking out of my chest. But my own pains can wait. Ahead of me, Cal stills, his broad shoulders rising and falling, an indication of deep, steadying breaths. I put a hand to his arm, hoping to calm him as he calms me. His skin flames beneath my fingers, almost too hot to touch. "No, it isn't," I tell Nix, pushing all the steel I can into my voice. "That's not what happened at all." "So the king's head rolled off on its own, then?" He chuckles, expecting a rise of laughter. But even Killorn has the good sense to stay quiet. He doesn't even smile. He understands the pain of dead fathers. "It was Maven," Killorn growls, surprising us all. The look in his eyes is pure fire. "Maven and his mother, the queen, she can control your mind and..." His voice falters, not wanting to continue. The king's death was so horrible, even for a man we hated. "And?" Nix prods, chancing a few steps toward Cal. I stop him with one daggered glare, and thankfully he halts a few feet away. But his face pulls into a sneer, eager to see the prince in pain. I know he has reasons to torture Cal, but that doesn't mean I have to let him. "Keep walking," I murmur, so low only Cal can hear. Instead, he turns, his muscles taut beneath my touch. They feel like hot waves rolling on a solid sea. "Ilara made me do it, Marston." His bronze eyes meet Nix's, daring him to take another step. "She twisted her way into my head, controlling my body. But she let my mind stay. She let me watch as my arms took his sword, as I separated his head from his shoulders, and then she told the world it's what I wanted all along." And then softer, as if reminding himself, "She made me kill my father." Some of Nix's malice dies away, enough to reveal the man beneath. "I saw the pictures," he mumbles, as if in apology. "They were everywhere, on every screen in town. I thought... it looked..." Cal's eyes flicker, out to the trees. But he's not looking at the leaves. His gaze is in the past, to something more painful. "She killed my true mother as well. And she'll kill all of us, if we let her." The words come out hard and harsh, a rusty blade to saw flesh. They taste wonderful in my mouth. "Not if I kill her first." For all his talents, Cal is not a violent person. He can kill you in a thousand different ways, lead an army, burn down a village, but he will not enjoy it. So his next words take me by surprise. "When the time comes," he says, staring at me, "we'll flip a coin." His bright flame has grown dark indeed. When we emerge from the forest, a brief shudder of fear runs through me. What if the Black Run's gone? What if we were tracked? What if, what if, what if? But the air jet is exactly where we left it. It's nearly invisible in the darkness, blending into the gray-black runway. I resist the urge to sprint into its safety and force myself to keep pace next to Cal. Not too close, though. No distractions. "Keep your eyes open," Cal mutters, A small but firm warning as we approach. He doesn't take his eyes off the jet, watching for any indication of a trap. I do the same, glaring at the back ramp still lowered against the runway, open to the night air. It looks clear to me, but shadows gather in the belly of the black run, pitch dark and impossible to see through from this distance. It took a great amount of energy and focus to power on the entire jet, but the light bulbs within are another story. Even from 10 yards away, it's easy to reach out to their wiring, spark up their charges, and illuminate the inside of the jet with a bright and sudden glow. Nothing moves inside, but the others react, surprised by the burst of light. Farley even frees her pistol from the holster strapped to her leg. "It's just me," I tell her with a wave of my hand. "The jet's empty." My pace quickens. I'm eager to be inside, cocooned by the growing charge of electricity that strengthens with my every step. When I set foot on the ramp, climbing up into the craft, it feels like entering a warm embrace. I run a hand along the wall, tracing the outline of a metal panel as I pass by. More of my power flows, bleeding out from the light bulbs, running along electrical pathways into the massive cell batteries beneath my feet and fixed under each wing. They hum in perfect unison, sending out their own energy, switching on what I haven't. The black run comes to life. Nix gasps behind me, in awe of the massive metal jet. He's probably never seen one this close, let alone stepped inside one. I turn around, expecting to find him staring at the seats or the cockpit, but his eyes are firmly fixed on me. He flushes and ducks his head in what could be a shaky bow. Before I can tell him exactly how much that annoys me, he shuffles to a seat, puzzling over the safety belts. "Do I get a helmet?" he asks the silence. "If we're going to be crashing through the air, I want a helmet." Laughing, Killorn takes a seat next to Nix and buckles them both in with quick, agile fingers. "Nix, I think you're the only one here who doesn't need one." They chuckle together, sharing crooked smiles. If not for me, for the Scarlet Guard. Killorn would have probably turned out just like Nix. A battered old man with nothing left to give but his bones. And how I hope he gets the chance to grow old. To have aching knees and a gray beard of his own. If only Killorn would let me protect him. If only he didn't insist on throwing himself in front of every bullet that comes his way.
"So, she really is the Lightning Girl. And this one's,
He gestures across the jet, to Shade, searching for a word to describe his ability. "Jumper," Shade offers with a respectful nod. He fastens his belts as tightly as he can, already paling at the prospect of another flight. Farley doesn't look so affected, and resolutely stares from her seat, eyes on the windows of the cockpit.
"Jumper, okay? What about you, boy?"
He nudges Killorn with his elbow, blind to the boy's fading smile.
"What can you do?"
I sink into the cockpit seat, not wanting to see any pain in Killorn's face, but I'm not quick enough. I catch a glimpse of his embarrassed flush, his rigid shoulders, his narrowing eyes and piercing scowl. The reason is shockingly clear. Jealousy twists through every inch of him, spreading as quickly as an infection. The intensity of it surprises me. Not once did I ever think Killorn wanted to be like me, like a silver. He's proud of his blood, he always has been. He even raged at me, back when he first saw what I had become. "Are you one of them?" he growled, his voice harsh and unfamiliar. He was so angry. But then, why is he angry now?
"I catch fish," he says, forcing a hollow smile.
There's a bitterness in his voice, and we let it fester in our silence. Nix speaks first, clapping Killorn on the shoulder.
"Crabs," he says, wiggling his fingers. "Been a crabber all my life."
A bit of Killorn's discomfort recedes, pulling back behind a crooked grin. He turns to watch Cal switch his way across the control panel, making the black run ready for another flight. I feel the jet respond in kind, its energy flowing toward the wing-mounted engines. They start to whir, gaining power with every passing second.
"Looks good," Cal says, finally punching a hole in the uncomfortable quiet. "Where to next?" It takes a second to realize he's asking me.
Oh,
I stumble over the words. The closest names are in Harbor Bay, 2 in the city proper, 1 in the slums. I expect more of a fuss at the prospect of breaking into a walled Silver City. But Cal only nods.
That won't be easy,
he warns, his bronze eyes flashing with the panel's blinking lights. I'm so happy you're here to tell us what we don't already know, I reply dryly.
Farley, you think we can do it?
She nods, and there's a crack in her usually stoic mask, revealing emotion beneath. Excitement. Her fingers drum on her thigh. I get the sickening sense that she sees part of this as a game. I've got enough friends in the bay, she says. The walls won't be a problem.
Then to the bay we go,
Cal says. His grim tone is not at all comforting. Neither is the drop in my stomach as the jet lurches forward, screaming down a mile of hidden runway. This time, when we angle into the sky, I close my eyes tight. Between the comforting thrum of engines and the knowledge that I am not needed, it's frighteningly easy to fall asleep. I shift between sleep and waking many times, never truly succumbing to the quiet darkness my mind so desperately needs. Something about the jet keeps me suspended, my eyes never opening, but my brain never completely shutting off. I feel like Shade, pretending to be asleep, collecting whispered secrets. But the others are silent, and judging by Nix's sputtering snores, out like snuffed candles. Only Farley stays awake. I hear her unbuckle and move to Cal's side, her footsteps almost inaudible over the jet engines. I doze off then, catching a few needed minutes of shallow rest, before her low voice brings me back.
We're over the ocean, she murmurs, sounding confused.
Cal's neck cracks as he turns, bone on bone. He didn't hear her coming, too focused on the jet.
Perceptive, he says after he recovers.
Why are we over the ocean? The bay is south, not east.
Because we've got more than enough juice to circle off the coast, and they need to sleep.
Something like fear taints his voice. Cal hates water. This must be killing him. Her scoff grates low in her throat.
They can sleep where we land. The next runway is hidden like the last.
She won't.
Not with new bloods on the line. She'll march until she drops, and we can't let her do that. A long pause. He must be staring, convincing her with eyes instead of words. I know firsthand how persuasive his eyes can be.
And when do you sleep, Cal?
His voice lowers, not in volume, but mood.
I don't. Not anymore.
I want to open my eyes, to tell him to turn around, to make as much haste as he can. We're wasting time out on the ocean, burning precious seconds that could spell life or death for the new bloods of Norta. But my anger is tempered by exhaustion. And cold. Even next to Cal, a walking furnace, I feel the familiar creep of ice in my flesh. I don't know where it comes from, only that it arrives in moments of quiet, when I'm still, when I think. When I remember all I've done and what has been done to me. The ice sits where my heart should be, threatening to split me open. My arms curl around my chest, trying to stop the pain. It works a little, letting warmth back into me. But where the ice melts, it leaves only emptiness, an abyss, and I don't know how to fill it back up.
But I will heal. I must.
I'm sorry, he murmurs, almost too low to hear, still enough to keep me from drifting away. But his words aren't meant for me. Something jostles my arm. Farley, as she moves closer to hear him.
For what I did to you, before, in the Hall of the Sun.
His voice almost breaks. Cal carries ice of his own. The memory of frozen blood, of Farley's torture in the cells of the palace. She refused to betray her own, and Cal made her scream for it.
I don't expect you to accept any kind of apology, and you shouldn't.
I accept, she says. Curt, but sincere. I made mistakes that night as well. We all did.
Even though my eyes are closed, I know she's looking at me. I can feel her gaze painted with regret and resolve. The bump of wheels against concrete jerks me awake, bouncing me in my seat. I open my eyes only to squeeze them shut again, turning away from the bright stab of sunlight pouring through the cockpit windows. The others are wide awake, talking quietly, and I look over my shoulder to face them. Even though we're tearing across the runway, slowing down but still moving, Killorn lurches to my side. I guess his river legs are good for something, because the motion of the jet doesn't seem to affect him at all. Mayor Barrow, if I catch you dozing one more time, I'll report you to the outpost. He mimics our old teacher, the one we shared until he turned 7 and left to apprentice with a fisherman. I look up at him, grinning at the memory. Then I'll sleep in the stocks, Miss Van Dark, I reply, sending him into a bout of chuckles. As I wake more fully, I realize I'm covered in something, soft, worn fabric, dark in color. Killorn's jacket. He pulls it away before I can protest, leaving me cold without its warmth. Thanks, I mutter, watching him pull it back on. He just shrugs. You were shivering. It's going to be a haul into the bay. Cal's voice is loud over the roaring engines, still spooling down from the flight. He never takes his eyes off the runway and guides the jet to a halt. Like 9-5 Field, this so-called ruin is surrounded by forest and totally deserted. 10 miles through forest and outskirts, he adds, angling his head toward Farley. Unless you have something else up your sleeve? She laughs to herself, unbuckling her belts. Learning, are you? With a snap, she lays the colonel's map across her knees. We can cut it to 6 if we take the old tunnels and avoid the outskirts altogether. Another undertrain? The thought fills me with a combination of hope and dread. Is that safe? What's an undertrain? Nix grumbles, his voice far away. I won't waste my time explaining the rattling metal tube we left behind in Nayersea. Farley ignores him, too. There aren't any stationed in the bay, not yet, but the tunnel itself runs right under the port road. That is, if it hasn't been closed up. She glances at Cal, but he shakes his head. Not enough time to. 4 days ago, we thought the tunnels were collapsed and abandoned. They aren't even mapped. Even with every strong arm at his disposal, Maven couldn't possibly have blocked them all by now. His voice falters, heavy with thought. I know what he's remembering. It was only 4 days ago. 4 days since Cal and Ptolemus found Walsh in the train tunnels beneath Archeon. 4 days since we watched her kill herself to protect the secrets of the Scarlet Guard. To distract myself from the memory of Walsh's glassy, dead eyes, I stretch out of my seat, bend and flex my muscles. Let's get moving, I say, and it sounds more like a command than I would like. I've memorized the next batch of names. Ada Wallace, born 61290, in Harbor Bay, Beacon, Regent State, Norta, current residence, same as birth. And the other, also listed in Harbor Bay, Walliver Galt, born 1-20-302. He shares a birthday with Killorn, identical down to the year. But he is not Killorn. He is a new blood, another red and silver mutation for Killorn to envy. Strange, then, that Killorn shows no animosity toward Nix. In fact, he seems friendlier than usual, hovering around the older man like an underfoot puppy. They talk quietly, bonding over the shared experience of growing up poor, red, and hopeless. When Nix brings up nets and knots, a dull topic Killorn adores, I turn my focus toward getting everything else situated. Part of me wishes I could join them to debate the value of a good double-bone loop rather than the best infiltration strategy. It would make me feel normal, because no matter what Shade says, we are anything but. Farley is already on the move, pulling a dark brown jacket over her shoulders. She tucks her red scarf into it, hiding the color, and starts packing up rations from our stores. They aren't low yet, but I make a mental note to lift anything I can during our journey, if I get the chance. Guns are another matter. We only have 6 total, and stealing more will be no easy feat. 3 rifles, 3 pistols. Farley already has 1 of each.
the long-barreled rifle across her shoulder, and the pistol at her hip. She slept with them attached to her, like they were limbs. So it comes as a surprise when she unlatches them both, returning the guns to the storage locker on the wall.
"You're going in unarmed?"
Cal balks, his own rifle in hand. In response, she pulls up a pant leg, revealing a long knife tucked into her boot. "The Bay's a big city. We'll need the day to find Mayor's people, and maybe the whole night to get them out. I won't risk that carrying an unregistered firearm. An officer would execute me on the spot. I'll take my chances with villages, where there's less enforcement, but not the Bay," she adds, hiding the knife again. "Surprised you don't know your own laws, Cal." He flushes silver, the tips of his ears turning bone white in embarrassment. Try as he might, Cal never had a head for laws and politics. That was Maven's domain. Always Maven's. "And anyways," Farley continues, her eyes slicing at us both, "I consider you and the Lightning Girl much better weapons than guns." I can almost hear Cal's teeth grinding together in anger and frustration. "I told you we can't," he begins, and I don't have to listen to his muttered words to know his arguments. "We're the most wanted people in the kingdom. We're dangerous to everyone. We'll jeopardize everything." And while my first instinct is to listen to Cal, my second, my constant, is not to trust him. Because sneaking is not his specialty, it's mine. While he debates with Farley, I quietly prepare myself for the tunnels in Harbor Bay. I remember it from Julian's books, and slide the map away from Farley. She doesn't notice the smooth action, still busy badgering Cal. Shade joins, intervening on her behalf, and the jabbering three leave me to sit silently and plan. The Colonel's map of Harbor Bay is newer than the one Julian showed me, and more detailed. Just as Archeon was built around the massive bridge the Scarlet Guard destroyed, Harbor Bay, naturally, centers on its famous bowl-like harbor. Most of it is artificially built, forming a too perfect curve of ocean against land. Both Green Wardens and Nymphs helped build the city and the harbor, alternately burying and flooding the ruins of what once stood here. And dividing the ocean circle, jutting straight out into the water, is a straight roadway full of gates, army patrols, and choke points. It separates the civilian Aquarian port from the aptly named War Port, and leads to Fort Patriot, perched on a flat square of walled land in the middle of the harbor. The fort is considered the most valuable in the country, the only base that services all three branches of the military. Patriot is home to the soldiers of the Beacon Legion, as well as squadrons of the Air Fleet. The water of the War Port itself is deep enough for even the largest of ships, creating an essential dock for the Norton Navy. Even on the map, the fort looks intimidating. Hopefully Ada and Walliver will be found outside its walls. The city itself spreads around the harbor, crowding between the docks. Harbor Bay is older than Archeon, incorporating the ruins of the city that once stood here. The roads twist and split unpredictably. Next to the neat grid of the capital, the bay looks like a tangle of knotted wire, perfect for rogues like us. Some of the streets even dip underground, linking up with the tunnel network Farley seems to know so well. While extracting two new bloods from Harbor Bay won't be easy, it doesn't seem so impossible, especially if a few power outages happen to roll through the city at just the right moment. "You're welcome to stay here, Cal," I say, lifting my head from the map. "But I'm not sitting this one out." He stops mid-sentence, turning to face me. For a moment, I feel like a pile of kindling about to be set ablaze. "Then I hope you're ready to do what you have to. Ready to kill everyone who recognizes me. Anyone who recognizes me." "I am." I'm very good at lying. 13. It's easy to convince Nix to stay behind. Even with his invulnerability, he's still a village crabber who's never gone farther than the salt marshes of his home. A rescue mission inside a walled city is no place for him, and he knows it. Killorn is not so easily swayed. He agrees to stay on the jet only after I remind him that someone needs to keep an eye on Nix.
When he hugs me tightly, saying goodbye for the moment, I expect to hear a whispered warning, some advice, maybe. Instead, I get encouragement, and it's more comforting than it should be.
"You're going to save them," he murmurs. "I know you are."
Save them. The words echo in my head, following me down the jet ramp and into the sunlit forest. "I will," I tell myself, repeating until I believe in myself as much as Killorn does. "I will, I will, I will." The woods here are thinner, forcing us to be on constant guard. In the daylight, Cal doesn't have to worry about flame and keeps his fire ready, each fingertip burning like the wick of a candle. Shade is off the ground entirely, jumping himself from tree to tree. He searches the forest with a soldier's precision, his hawk-like gaze sweeping in every direction before he's satisfied. I keep my own senses open, feeling for any burst of electricity that might be a transport or low-flying airship. There's a dull hum to the southeast toward Harbor Bay, but that's to be expected, just like the ebb and flow of traffic along the port road. We're well out of earshot of the byway, but my inner compass tells me we're getting closer with every step. I feel them before I see them. It's small, the slightest pressure against my open mind. The tiny battery bleeds electricity, probably powering a watch or radio. "From the east," I murmur, pointing toward the approaching energy source. Farley whips toward the direction, not bothering to crouch. But I certainly do, dropping to a knee in the foliage, letting the first colors of autumn camouflage my dark red shirt and brown hair. Cal is right beside me, flames close to his skin, controlled so that they don't set the forest on fire. His breathing is even, steady, practiced, as his eyes search through the trees. I extend a finger, pointing toward the battery. A single spark runs down my hand and disappears, calling out to the electricity drawing near.
"Farley, get down,"
Cal growls, his voice almost lost among the rustling leaves. Instead of obeying, she backs against a tree, melting into the shadows of the trunk. Sunlight through the leaves above dapples her skin, and her stillness makes her look like part of the forest. But she is not quiet. Her lips part, and a low bird call echoes through the branches, the same one she used outside Courant to communicate to Killorn. A signal. The Scarlet Guard.
"Farley," I hiss through gritted teeth. "What's going on?"
But she isn't paying attention to me and watches the trees instead. Waiting. Listening. A moment later, someone hoots out a trilling reply, similar but not the same. When Shade responds from the tree above us, adding his own call to the strange song, a bit of my fear lifts away. Farley could lead me into a trap, but Shade wouldn't, I hope.
"Captain! Thought you were stuck on that blasted island,"
a coarse voice says, filtering out of a thick grove of elms. The accent, hard vowels and missing R's, is thick and distinct. Harbor Bay. Farley smiles at the sounds, pushing off her tree trunk smoothly. "Krantz," she says, beckoning to the figure picking through the underbrush.
"Where's Melody? I was supposed to meet her. Since when are you Egan's errand boy?"
When he steps out from the foliage, I do my best to size him up, taking in the little details I taught myself to notice long ago. He leans, compensating for something heavy left behind. A rifle, perhaps, or maybe a club? Errand boy, indeed. He has the look of a dock worker, or a brawler, with massive arms and a barrel chest hiding beneath the bulk of worn cotton and a quilted vest. It's heavily patched, creating a motley plaid of discarded fabric, all red in hue. Strange that his vest is so battered, but his leather boots look new, polished to a high sheen. Stolen, probably. My kind of man. Krantz shrugs at Farley, a twitch tugging at his dark face. "She's got business on the docks, and I prefer right-hand man, if you don't mind." He turns the twitch into a grin, then bows in a smooth, exaggerated motion,
Of course, Boss Egan bids you welcome, Captain.
It's not Captain anymore, Farley mutters, frowning as she clasps his forearm in some version of a handshake. I'm sure you've heard.
He merely shakes his head. You'll find few here who'll go along with that. The Mariners answer to Egan, not your colonel.
Mariners? Another division within the Scarlet Guard, I suppose.
Are your friends going to keep hiding in the bushes?
He adds, angling a glance at me. His blue eyes are electrifying, made even sharper by his umber skin. But they aren't enough to distract me from the more pressing issue. I still feel the pulsing watch battery, and Krantz isn't wearing a watch.
What about your friends? I ask him, standing up from the forest floor.
Cal moves in time with me, and I can tell he's scrutinizing Krantz, sizing him up. The other man does the same, one kind of soldier to another. Then he grins, teeth gleaming.
So, this is why the colonel's making such a fuss, he chuckles, taking one daring step forward.
Neither of us flinches, despite his size. We're more dangerous than he is. He lets out a low whistle, turning his gaze back to me.
The exiled prince and the lightning girl? And where's the rabbit? I knew I heard him.
Rabbit? Shade's form appears behind Krantz, one arm on his crutch, the other around Krantz's neck. But he's smiling, laughing.
I told you not to call me that,
he chides, shaking Krantz's shoulders.
If the shoe fits,
Krantz replies, shrugging out of Shade's grasp. He makes a hopping motion with his hand, laughing as he does so. But his grin fades a little at the sight of the crutch and bandages.
You fall down a flight of stairs or something?
Krantz keeps his tone light, but darkness clouds his bright eyes. Shade waves off his concern and grips one broad shoulder.
It's good to see you, Krantz, and I guess I should introduce you to my sister. No introductions necessary,
Krantz says, shoving an open hand my way. I take it willingly, letting him squeeze my own forearm in a hand twice the size of my own.
Good to meet you, Mayor Barrow, but I have to say, you look better on the wanted posters. Didn't know that was possible.
The others grimace, just as frightened as I am of the thought of my face, plastered in every door and window. We should have expected this.
Sorry to disappoint,
I force out, letting my hand drop out of his. Exhaustion and worry have not been kind to me. I can feel the dirt on my skin, not to mention the tangles in my hair. I've been a little too busy to look in the mirror.
Krantz takes the jibe in stride, grinning wider. You really do have Spock, he murmurs,
and I don't miss his eyes straying to my fingers. I fight the urge to show him exactly how much spark he's dealing with and dig my nails into the flesh of my palms. The touch of a battery is still there, a firm reminder.
So are you going to keep pretending you don't have us surrounded?
I press, gesturing to the trees crowding in from every angle.
Or are we going to have a problem?
No problem at all,
he says, raising his hands in mock surrender. Then he whistles again, this one high and keen, like a falcon on the hunt. Though Krantz does his best to keep smiling, to seem relaxed, I don't miss the suspicion in his eyes. I expect him to keep close watch of Cal, but it's me he doesn't trust, or doesn't understand. The crunch of leaves announces the appearance of Krantz's friends, also dressed in a combination of rags and stolen finery. It's a uniform of sorts, so mismatched they begin to look alike. Two women and a man, the one with a battered but ticking watch, all seemingly unarmed. They salute Farley, smile at Shade, and don't know how to look at Cal and me. It's better that way, I suppose. I don't need more friends to lose.
Well, Rabbit, let's see if you can keep up,
Krantz needles, falling into step. In response, Shade jumps to a nearby tree, his bad leg dangling and a smile on his lips. But when his eyes meet mine, something shifts. And then he's behind me for a split second, moving so quickly I barely see him. I hear what he whispers,
all the same. Trust no one.
The tunnels are damp, the curved walls tangled with moss and deep roots, but the floor is clear of rock and debris. For undertrains, I suspect, if any need to slip into Harbor Bay. But there's no screech of metal on metal, no blinding pound of a train battery screaming toward us. All I feel is the flashlight in Krantz's hand, the other man's watch, and the steady pattern of traffic on the port road 30 feet above our heads. The heavier transports are the worst, their wires and instruments whining in the back of my skull. I cringe as each one passes overhead, and I quickly lose count of how many rush toward Nayersee. If they were clustered together, I would suspect a royal convoy carrying Maven himself. But the machines come and go seemingly at random. This is normal, I tell myself, calming my nerves so I don't short out the flashlight and plunge us all into darkness. Krantz's followers bring up the rear, which should put me on edge, but I don't mind. My sparks are only a heartbeat away, and I have Cal at my side if someone makes a bad decision. He's more intimidating than I am, one hand ablaze with red and dancing fire. It casts flickering shadows that morph and change, painting the tunnel in swirls of red and black. His colors once, but they're lost to him now. Just like everything else. Everything but me. It's no use whispering down here. Every sound carries, so Cal keeps his mouth firmly shut. But I can still read his face. He's uncomfortable, fighting against every instinct as a soldier, a prince, and a silver. Here he is, following his enemy into the unknown. And for what? To help me? To hurt Maven? Whatever the reasons, one day they won't be good enough to keep going. One day, he's going to stop following me, and I need to prepare myself for it. I need to decide what my heart will allow, and what loneliness I can bear. But not yet. His warmth is with me still, and I can't help but keep it close. The tunnels aren't on our map, or on any map I've seen, but the port road is, and I suspect we're right below it. It leads straight into the heart of the bay, through Pike Gate, curving around the harbor itself before heading north to the salt marshes, Courant, and the frozen borderlands, far away. More important than the port road is the security center, the administrative hub for the entire city, where we can find records and, most important, addresses for Ada and Wolliver. The third name, the young girl in the slums of Newtown, might be there as well. Cameron Cole, I remember, though the rest of her information escapes me at the moment. I don't dare pull out Julian's list to double-check, not with so many unfamiliar faces around. The less who know about the New Bloods, the better. Their names are death sentences, and I have not forgotten Shade's warning. With any luck, we'll have everything we need by nightfall and be back to the Black Run by breakfast, with three more New Bloods in tow. Killorn will grumble. Angry at us for being gone so long, but that's the least of my worries. In fact, I look forward to his flushed face and petulant whining. Despite the guard and his newfound rage, the boy I grew up with still glimmers beneath, and he is just as comforting as Cal's fire or my brother's embrace. Shade talks to fill the silence, joking with Krantz and his followers. "This man's the reason I got out of the choke alive," my brother explains, gesturing to Krantz with his crutch. "Executioners couldn't get me, but starvation almost did." "You stole a head of cabbage. I just let you eat it," Krantz replies with a shake of his head, but his flush betrays his pride. Shade doesn't let him off so easily. He pastes on a grin that could light the tunnels, but there's no light in his eyes. A smuggler with a heart of gold. I watch their back and forth with narrowed eyes and open ears, following the conversation like a game. One compliments the other, recalling their journey back from the choke, eluding security and the legions alike. And while they may have formed a friendship in those weeks, it doesn't seem to exist anymore. Now they're just men sharing memories and forced smiles, each one trying to figure out exactly what the other wants. I do the same, coming to my own conclusions.
Krantz is a glorified thief, a profession I know well enough. The best part about thieves is you can trust them to do their worst. If our positions were reversed and I was my old self escorting a fugitive into the stilts,